That's coming on.
Oh, goody. And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard to Foxed Up here for a Monday night or Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, all depending on where you are in this beautiful blue marble, such that it still is. And it's not going to be a green program today because I think we got to talk about about good people standing up for what's right. And there's a lot happening at the moment that revolves around this. Now, in the Horn section, we did talk a little bit about the Tibet protests that have been going on regarding the Olympic torch relay in China. If you were listening to Bob's program earlier about the coal thugs that showed up at the Blessing of the Mountain ceremony over the weekend to try and strong arm and shout down good people. And I just don't want folks to become disheartened, because what I saw on what I've been watching on the television the last couple of days, watching what's happened in the UK with the protests of the Olympic torch rally, what has happened in France, what's already happening in San Francisco, and the relay's not even there yet, is heartening. And it reminds me about the fact that, you know, these things can actually have an effect. And you when those that kind of stick with the status quo and defend the status quo, like those thugs that went after Bob and those very, very nice people in West Virginia over the weekend, you know that you're actually striking a nerve. And it's when you strike a nerve that you cannot give in. I am so proud of the folks in the UK, and I'm actually really proud of the BBC, because we've been finding out recently, we found out that the BBC covered the entire thing nonstop. It wasn't just breaks in, it was live coverage of the entire relay, so that the British people got to see everything that went down. And how dare the people at Downing Street, number 10, think that it is in any way, shape, or form right to allow security forces from another nation onto your land, and you call yourselves sovereign. This kind of stuff just freaks me out. We're going to get into this, and thank you to my wonderful partner, Gail, who heard that I was going to go here and sent me some really great links while we're doing the horn section, and we'll get to some of this stuff. And I've also got a piece by Johan Harry, or Johan, I'm not sure the pronunciation, about boycotts, which we'll get into. But the track of the day today is for the folks standing up for what's right, regardless of the issue, whether it's mountaintop removal mining, whether it's standing up for the oppression against the people in Tibet, or the opposition in Zimbabwe at the moment, who are scared shitless at the moment. If they rise up, their corrupt, evil, current dictator of a so-called president will come down on them. Because it's all about getting to the heart of the matter, the semantics, the politics, sport, it's all secondary. We're talking about human rights. We're talking about humanity. And anyone who stands up to defend humanity deserves support. And that's why today's track of the day, just it was an obvious choice. It's just a great rock and roll song from, I still think, Australia's greatest modern rock and roll hard rock band, good friends of mine, the Screaming Jets, off of their EP, Heart of the Matter. This is the title track. Those of you that have been with the horn since the very early days will remember this as being the hour two opener from when Bruce and I were doing Fourth Estate Radio. And this is just an ass kicker of a song. And it's all about just, I'm not going to be knocked down anymore, and I'm not going to be quiet anymore, because we got to get to the heart of the matter, or else nothing's going to change. The song kind of deals with environment and other things, but this is a band that has never been shy to talk about difficult issues in a good rock and roll song. And I've always appreciated this band, and I'm glad to be able to call them my friends. And this is just a kicker of a song. So this is one of those, kick it up to 11. This is an 11 song if there ever was one. I know Bob loves this song. So without further ado, from the Screamin' Jets, check them out at screaminjets.com.au. Heart of the Matter, roll it, Bob.
One, two, three. I can't.
Now that's a fucking rocker. that kind of music just kind of gets my blood pumping. And it's a great lyric. It's a great lyric. I'm not ashamed to say what's real. And I won't be taken back this time. And I think that this is exactly the kind of attitude that we have to have when faced with these things. Like I said, I've been watching what's been happening around this torch relay, and I'm heartened. Now, Gail made the comment here at home last night saying, you know, kind of wish they had stood up for their own rights the same, but hey. Baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. Now, this is really making some serious impact. And here, I want to go actually this Hari piece. And this is at The Independent. Boycotting the Beijing Olympics won't work, but here's a proposal that just might. This was published yesterday. It says, on the streets of London, the Chinese dictatorship has just learned with a painful jab that their Olympic slogan, One World, One Dream, is true. In every city the Olympic torch sashays through on its world tour, its greeting is the same. Tibetans wave their banned flag and grieve for their freshly slaughtered countrymen. Falun Gong refugees hold aloft pictures of their co-believers who have vanished into China's vast re-education camps. Darfuris cry for an end to the massacres against them, backed from Beijing, and ordinary people line the streets to support them. Yes, they all have one dream, the end to human rights abuses. But aren't the Olympics meant to be an apolitical, or aren't they meant to be apolitical, one of the few places where we can gather and leave our ideologies at the door? Yes, but it's not the protesters who politicize the Olympics. It is the Chinese communist dictatorship. As the leading Chinese human rights lawyer, Gao Zhisheng, who taught himself law in the shack of his province, explained last year, the Chinese communist regime sees the hosting of the Olympics as political. They are using it to prove to the Chinese people that the world is still acknowledging the party as a legal government, despite all suppressive and bloody tyranny and all the horrible crimes against humanity the party has committed. Shortly after he issued this warning, Gao disappeared, and so many Chinese human rights activists do. With this move, the Chinese government proved his point. The protesters are simply trying to stop the Chinese dictatorship from continuing to wave the Olympics as a bogus global seal of approval from their cruel rule. Now they are asking, how do we keep disrupting the 100 meters propaganda sprint that takes us up to August? Should there be a boycott of Beijing? So far, the discussion is focused on one very narrow sliver of the games, whether our political leaders should attend the opening ceremony. But this is looking in the wrong direction. Our politicians are not the people to take a moral stand on our behalf. Not only are many soaked in the blood of innocents themselves, worse, last year they actually used their power to lobby hard against a major extension of human rights in China. Here's how it happened. The Chinese government was being battered by industrial unrest across the country's factories and mines. There were more than 300,000 industrial protests in 2006 because ordinary Chinese people were sick of being paid artificially low wages and seeing their colleagues lose limbs in shrieking machinery just to provide us with ultra-cheap goods. So the Chinese dictatorship decided, through gritted teeth, to allow ordinary Chinese citizens to form trade unions. It was an extraordinary gasp of freedom, allowing political organizations to be formed across the country. Our government panicked. The mighty business lobbies told them, in more polite language, that if Chinese workers are not lashed into submission, they will start demanding more wages and to make their workplaces safe. That means lower profits for our businesses and higher prices at our tills. So the U.S. and European governments lobbied the Communist Party hard against upholding this basic right. Our leaders stood up for unfreedom and won. The law was ditched. We still get to shop until Chinese workers drop. How can those same leaders pop up a year later and posture about greater rights in China? And these are really good questions. You know, this Walmart makes their entire business on these abuses. Not entire, but most. But one of the great things about the Olympics is that we aren't represented by our politicians. We are represented by ordinary citizens who happen to be extraordinarily brilliant athletes. They are untainted by the fetid calculations of geopolitics and corporate corruption. They can speak for basic human values if they choose to. So far, the discussion of a sporting boycott has also stalled because people assume there are only two options. Either we go along passively and smile into the communist propaganda camera, or we stay away until the distant day when China is a multi-party democracy with a First Amendment protecting free speech. There is another way. Our athletes can offer the Chinese government a deal. We will happily take part provided you meet three simple practical conditions. Follow this checklist and your international coming out party will go swimmingly. First, release China's 10 greatest human rights activists. Top the list of the Chinese hero, Hu Jie. He is a 34-year-old father rotting in a jail because he campaigned for the rights of AIDS victims and against the environmental destruction spreading across the country. We're going to need Chinese allies like him in the years to come as the great leap backwards of global warming intensifies. Second, invite the Dalai Lama to Beijing and talk to him. Just talk. When I met the Dalai Lama a few years ago, he said he would do it. This is in China's interest, too. The younger generation of Tibetans coming up behind him are less prepared to offer up the other cheek for a kicking. Israel has learned the hard way that if you react to largely peaceful protests against occupation, like the first Intifada in the 1980s, with beatings and bullets, you face rockets and suicide bombers further down the line. China still has a chance to stop that shift. Just. Third, allow a real UN peacekeeping force into Darfur. Since 2003, the Chinese government has been covering at the UN for the genocidal Sudanese government in return for full access to the country's oil. They will only vote for a peacekeeping force if the Sudanese government, the murderers, retains the right to veto the arrival of any troops. As the limping, bloody people of Darfur told me last summer as they filed across the border, this Chinese clause makes peace impossible. And finally, allow us to set up a website that breaks through the great firewall of China, explaining why we have laid down these conditions. If the athletes of the free-ish world unite behind these demands, there is a significant chance that the Chinese government will meet them. The embarrassment of their multi-billion dollar phallus flopping before the world may well trump the embarrassment of conceding on these three issues. If we are going to ask the Olympic athletes to risk something they have worked for their whole lives for, we have to offer them something hefty. A noble but ineffective moral gesture won't do it. But with this proposal, we can say, imagine you could play a part in getting the Dalai Lama to Beijing, a proper peace force into Darfur, and 10 heroic men and women into freedom or go down trying. We have 4 months to persuade them this is worth making a stand for. Before being sent to his dungeon, Ha Jin wrote, "When you come to the Olympic Games in Beijing, you will see skyscrapers, modern stadiums, and enthusiastic people. You may not know that the flowers, smiles, and prosperity are built on a base of tears, imprisonment, torture, and blood." Ha was prepared to risk his life to tourniquet this flow of his countrymen's blood. Are we really not prepared to take a calculated, calibrated risk with the Olympics? I think that this speaks volumes. And I hope that our Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, being the fact that he can speak Mandarin, and as far as I can tell, is a man of conscience, will do what he does best, which is to be diplomatic and engage the Chinese on these issues. And this is the kind of talk that he's been putting forth. It's about constant engagement. So, boycotting the Olympics outright doesn't work. But I think that this idea of giving them reasons and a choice could possibly work. And this engagement road could work in other fronts. You know, when Bob first sent me the piece that that was published on Joe Badgett's site, half my brain couldn't believe what I was reading, and half my brain should have expected it. When you go after people who feel that they are being attacked because they don't know any better. I mean, this is the mountaintop removal thing. I mean, you know, you can't put it any other way than the folks who came and confronted and shouted down these religious people who were just having a blessing ceremony on a mountain. You know, they're acting at the request of their masters. Who are using fear tactics to make them do their bidding. You're going to have to expect a nasty reaction. I am not forgiving their actions in any way. And because of the stand that folks like Bob Kincaid and his family, Nanette and Paul and the others involved in that cause take, I worry about them. I worry about their well-being. I worry about their safety. Because if folks like these coal miners can be so easily convinced to go wear all these little matching T-shirts, you know, and save an endangered species, save a coal miner. They obviously don't think. These are the same people that will just follow their company masters, their government masters, down a black hole. Because they're not deep enough to think of the larger issues. Now, back on the Tibet thing. The London 2012 Olympics chief called the Chinese officials thugs. Thank you, Gail, for this. Sebastian Coe, the London 2012 Olympics chief, has been overheard by a British broadcaster describing several Chinese officials guarding the Olympic torch as it passed through London as thugs. Channel 4 News said it was accidentally connected to a conversation between Coe and the media spokesman when in fact the broadcaster had been hoping to speak to the former Olympian's media office. Coe's comments were directed at Chinese officials guarding the Olympic torch during its tumultuous journey through London on Sunday, when several protesters attempted to disrupt the route. He said that organizers of the French leg of the torch relay thought Paris should get rid of those guys because the Chinese officials tried to push me out of the way three times. They are horrible. They did not speak English. I think they were thugs. A spokesman for the London 2012 Olympics confirmed Coe, the 1980 and 1984 Olympic 1500 meters champion, had made the remarks. Sebco was commenting on media reports about the role of the Flames' attendance during yesterday's torch relay, a spokesman for the London Games said today. He was expressing his concern with the way that he had been treated by them when he was on the relay route. Channel 4 News said in a statement, by chance, Channel 4 News had attempted to contact Lord Coe's press office via the switchboard and was accidentally connected to the conversation he was having with a colleague, a 2012 press officer, Jackie Brock Doyle. Whoops. British police said more than 1,000 protesters tried to disrupt Sunday's proceedings with 37 arrests. One tried to grab the torch from a television presenter who was holding it, and attempts were also made to extinguish the flame. Meanwhile, Chinese officials called off a chaotic relay of the Olympic torch through Paris overnight after thousands of pro-Tibet protesters tried to block its path, and the flame had to be extinguished at least twice. It has been reported three times. police and the Chinese authorities organizing the five-hour passage of the torch had decided to give up the road relay after demonstrators protesting against China's crackdown on Tibet constantly snarled its progress and forced lengthy delays. And this was from the Sydney Morning Herald. See, this is just... See? This does actually make an impact. It does make an impact. I think it's fantastic. The Independent has another piece, Up in Flames, Humiliation for China as Torch Relay Descends into Chaos. The global procession of the Olympic flame, a symbol of sporting values hijacked as a symbol of Chinese state pride, stumbled into abject political embarrassment for Beijing and Western governments yesterday. The day after determined protests in London, a 17-mile torch relay through Paris dissolved into chaos, farce, and finally cancellation. The torch, although not the master flame, was extinguished at least four times as an elaborate security screen failed to fend off pro-Tibet and human rights demonstrators. Finally, in the insistence of the Chinese officials, the finale of the five-hour parade was abandoned. The flame was carried through the streets of the city of light in a police bus. French television and news agencies talked last night of a security fiasco. Activists spoke of a triumph for the defense of Tibetan and human rights. Now, one of my favorite bits about this is the fact that the governor or mayor of Paris actually paid for a lot of those banners that were flown in Paris and organized for them to be unfurled, and they were the Olympic rings done as handcuffs. The French know how to protest. They know how to protest. This piece continues on saying, the French government, which has blown hot and cold in its response to the Chinese crackdown in Tibet, has mobilized everything from police on roller skates to helicopters to protect the torch procession. Beijing flooded the French capital with thousands of enthusiastic Chinese students from all over Europe. See, they have to truck in supporters. This wouldn't go over well with the locals, I can guarantee it. Chinese students from all over Europe, but the result was an unequivocal victory for the relatively small, scattered hit squads of Tibetan and French and a few Chinese protesters. With similar protests planned in San Francisco, Delhi, and other stops on the flame's 21-nation, six-continent tour, Beijing must be regretting its decision to stage the longest and most complex torch relay in the history of the Olympics. The arrogance. Yesterday, three pro-Tibet activists unfurled a banner after climbing the cables of San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge to protest at the arrival of the torch in the city tomorrow. So if these guys have already gotten up, you know, before it even gets there, just imagine what it's going to be like on the streets of San Francisco tomorrow. And part of my brain, of course, has to think, okay, is this where we're going to see the first real-world test of that microwave weapon? Instead of a celebration of China's emergence as a world power, the journey of the flame is turned into a trail of shame. The most intensive international protest against Beijing's human rights violations since the student massacres in Tiananmen Square in 1989. Paris, which claims to be the city which invented human rights, comprehensively outdid London in its anti-Beijing protests. The torch had to be doused for security reasons four times as the bearer was bundled aboard a bus to avoid protesters who repeatedly broke through a supposedly unbreakable cordon. I love it. I love it. And some people will say, oh, you're just hateful. You just want to disrupt things. You just hate the Olympics. Well, you know what? Actually, I do kind of hate the Olympics. What it's turned into. It's turned into an absolutely shameless marketing ploy. And there's too much money, which ends up bringing on cheating, which ends up bringing on situations where when a nation like China is able to pressure an international organization, what's supposed to be an apolitical organization, to say, give us the games. This is what they should expect. And this is only the beginning. And the reason that we're seeing such protests on the root of this torch thing, nonsense, is because it's going to be a complete media crackdown once they get to Beijing. This is the only opportunity. So it's all going to happen in the lead up. And if this continues to happen, it continues to escalate the way that I think it is going to, the Chinese may just have to pull the plug on the whole thing. Now, seeing things like the British thinking about canceling their whole relay run for 2012, I don't necessarily think is... I think that's an overreaction. The UK is not China. The UK, who has, you know, through the Tony Blair years, sat with their nose just as far up George Bush's ass as Johnny Howard did. I don't think would have this kind of trouble. I could be wrong. So I really hope that Kevin Rudd does what he seems to be kind of setting up, that he's going to engage them. He's going to engage the Chinese, which I think will have a much more successful outcome than Australia pulling out of the Olympics. And that would end up being political suicide for Kevin Rudd, because, I mean, we live in, you know, a sports mad country. And no matter how much I might think that the Olympics have become a farce, I can't take away the desires of someone who has busted their hump for years to get to that level. It's not their fault that this thing is in China. Now, I do hope that some of the athletes will pull some stunts on the dais when they accept medals, aka 68. That's the kind of thing that I'm hoping for. There was talk about there being a little bit of a gag order on the Australian athletes, but word is that that's been lifted, and the only gag order is that they're not allowed to bag other athletes. Which is fair enough, kind of. But, and I'd be very interested, and this is the media guy in me, I'd be very interested to know, you know, the actual video feeds that will be pumped out to the world, you know, like, you know, Channel 7 here is, you know, your Olympic broadcaster. Will it actually be their crews and their cameras there? Or will it be the Chinese national media, the state-controlled media, creating all the feeds that go out globally? So that if some American, some Frenchman or woman, or some Australian decides to make a statement on the dais, or, you know, paint a Tibetan flag on their cheek, will that actually get out? Now, the Chinese have been working very, very hard to say, we've changed! Can't you see? And as we know, they haven't. Nothing's changed. You know, in America, our corporatized media has done a very good job at limiting the coverage of domestic protest. We know this. There have been protests all over the United States that don't actually get a lick. The media don't even show up. And I have to think that that has to be disheartening to those that work so hard to make a noise. Because to protest is to be American, is to be patriotic. It's the very thing that the country was founded on. Revolution. Revolution. But for those of us that do take to the streets on various different issues, take heart. Take heart as you watch what will continue to unfold around this fraud, which is the Chinese PR campaign. And the absolute criminality of the fact that they are hosting such an event. It's a great statement. I mentioned this in the horn section. You know, there's this great bit of footage that was replayed on the ABC in virtually all of their reports on the protests, which was this, you know, through the makeup, what looked like a 20 or 30 something, you know, white British woman, painted up beautifully in all the Tibetan colors, saying, "This is above politics. This is above sport. This is more important. We're talking about human rights." And marginalizing human rights over what is at best an escapist event, and at its worst a marketing feeding frenzy of just shit. I mean, every morning, you know, knowing that there was an Olympics coming up, I go, okay, here we come up with McDonald's and all their sponsorship of sport and good health and all this crap, which is nothing but spin to cover up the fact, with a freaking clown, a company that does nothing but poison people, destroy rainforests for cheap burgers, and create more waste than virtually any other food business in the world. You cannot go to a beach on this planet without finding McDonald's trash. A company that you cannot walk out of the joint with just the burger and its paper. It has to be put in the bag. And you know why they do that? The reason that they do it is because it's free freaking advertising. The more shit that they throw out there with their freaking logo on it, that lazy people just throw around, it's just more of the golden frickin' arches laying around so that people go, "Oh, McDonald's, I think I'm hungry. I'm going to go buy some shit food." And I think that that's the epitome of it all. You know, another thing that's disturbed me, too, you all may have seen this. I reckon that this is an international advertisement. The Jackie Chan Visa ads. Have you seen these? Is that really bizarre one where, you know, he gets, like, takeout food and ends up in a box, and that ends up being the dais that he opens up with his Visa card. And when he comes out, you know, there's that enormous Chinese basketball player, and all the flags and colors behind him advertising the Olympic Games are all Tibetan colors. How twisted. How twisted. And you know, I try and think, you know, one, how can Jackie Chan be involved with this? Well, we know what it is. It's huge money. Talented guy, talented action director, but to be involved with that, it's just more of the spin of the bullshit, which are these games. And I, you know, even if it wasn't China, the Olympics, just what they do to cities that host them is atrocious. Because you get all this money thrown at it. Sydney is dealing with this now, and this city is hurting so bad. There was so much money paid into sporting infrastructure and train lines that get out to a place that no one goes to. That was built on top of a toxic waste site, I have to remind everybody. It's a dioxin site. We're going to invite the world and have them all walk on a dioxin site. And then when we don't have any use for it anymore, we're going to force the local football teams to go and play on this field, which, because it's actual grass, they soak down with water, which has to be bringing that dioxin up to the top, up to the surface. And Australia's best and brightest local sports heroes are playing on this place. The Easter show was just there. This is where folks come for a bit of family fun, and, you know, the local producers like stockmen, cattle ranchers come and show their wares. It's huge for them. It's a huge event. Used to be held at the Sydney Cricket Ground. Now it's held out at Olympic Park. You look at any city that has hosted a games, and 8 years later they are suffering. Why nations and cities continue to vie for these things, for this event, I do not understand. It just ends up being a big, you know, a big ego thing for the local politicians. And, you know, your local developer's going, we'll love to build you a stadium. The stadium here was so freaking big that they already had a seat reduction rebuild planned for after the games were over. It's absolutely madness, and it's part of what's fed the rental and housing crisis in this town. And it's and you know, it's the white elephant in the room that no one still talks about. Spent the lead up to the games pumping money into an area that was not going to be able to sustain itself afterwards. Yeah, it's an amazing complex. But it's turning into a white elephant that's not being used properly. And never could. It was never going to be. Now, well, you know, with the Chinese government, we'll never see, you know, unless something seriously changes, we're not going to see the damage done down the road. What people will lose for this massive investment. Meanwhile, there have been deaths and injuries completely not reported in the building of these facilities. Because it's all been about the media campaign. I still remember when they were given these games. I just sat there and went, oh my God. This is just, you know, the world legitimizing a totalitarian one-party regime. But because none of us make shit anymore, we got to. Or else, You won't be able to get your cheap plastic Chinese shit at frickin' Wally's. Because what happens if they decide to, one, stop backing the U.S. economy and shut down all that manufacturing that ends up giving you cheap shit to buy and more money in executive pockets? You know, there was talk... former, you know, Australian sporting hero was asking, you know, that people be a little bit, you know, please feel free to protest. You know, when the torch comes by, turn your back. Da 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 da. Oh yeah, turn your back. That's going to do a whole hell of a lot. But he says, you know, stop buying Chinese goods. How? My question is how. How can you even function in modern society and not buy any Chinese goods? Because there are hardly any options. You don't have a choice. It's a good question. Bob asks, what happens if we stop sending them our coal? See, there's the other issue, too. Australia. 80% of the Australian export market is our coal exports. And most of that goes to China. So this is why I think Kevin Rudd is taking the right tact. Engagement. Engagement. Because if he cut off coal to China, it would be political suicide because the coal companies would start spending a fortune to destroy him. The unions would actually turn on him. Because it was the unions that paid a lot of money to help get him into office. For all the right reasons. But the Australian economy would just sink. Our trade deficit is horrible to begin with. We've been in a trade deficit since the late 90s. And the only thing that keeps it anywhere near close is our coal exports. So a boycott, any really drastic action, would be short-term suicide. So I do believe that this is where Kevin Rudd, being the diplomat that he is, being the Mandarin speaker that he is, taking the tact of engagement is the way to make an actual difference. Kind of felt like a serious rant coming on today, but I can't go totally ranty crazy. It's too serious. This is all just too damn serious, you know. Another thing from the Independent here. Thank you, Gail. Questions raised over mysterious men in blue. Shortly after Connie Huck, my guess of pronunciation, finished her brief leg on London's farcical Olympic torch relay on Sunday, she called a friend on her mobile phone. Did you see those blokes in the blue tracksuits? The former Blue Peter presenter whispered down the line. They were bloody aggressive, weren't they? Huck had just been involved in a tussle with a protester, so it was surprising that what appeared to concern her most was the Praetorian Guard of Chinese officials, who formed a wall around her during the short dash, rather than the demonstrator's intent in wrestling the Olympic torch from her grasp. But for any of the athletes, protesters, journalists, and even police who found themselves guided, barged, and fighting with this particularly committed group of Chinese minders, the identity and function of the boys in blue tracksuits was of paramount importance. Little is known about the mysterious guards accompanying the flame on its harmonious journey. Apart from the fact that they are well-trained security officers under the remit of the Beijing Games coordinators who have sweeping political powers in China. Officially, the minders are flame attendants employed by the Beijing Olympic Organization Committee, which has organized the global relay. Their role, in theory, is to be constant on hand, constantly on hand to ensure the flame never goes out. Boy, that worked. At night and during airline flights, when the torch is kept in a specially made closed lanterns. Three attendants guarded at all times. Should the flame be extinguished during a relay, they're responsible for relighting it. So far, so good, but although Commander Bob Broadhurst, the Metropolitan Police officer in charge of the route, insisted that flame attendants had no executive powers in Britain, their behavior on Sunday indicated otherwise, or at least hinted that they were being allowed to overstep the mark. How much leverage does China have on the West? Like I said, China has the real leverage at the moment, because all they have to do is shut down all that manufacturing. They don't give a shit about their people. They don't give a shit about the workers. They'll hold us all hostage because we've stopped making shit for short-term profits. We don't know how to do anything anymore, and we don't do anything anymore. You know, I'd like to be able to go to the hardware store and actually buy a tape measure that was either made in Australia or at least the United States. But I can go and buy the Chinese-made Stanley tape measure. It says here, Britain seems to have caved into demands from Beijing that Chinese security guards police the streets of London. Said Matt Whitcase of Free Tibet UK. It certainly fits in with the subpoena approach Britain has taken towards China over the years compared with other nations. Smell the hypocrisy. Smell the hypocrisy. You know, this is, you know, and this, again, I like the fact that Kevin Rudd's not letting these guys come to Australia. We'll let the Australian Federal Police and the local Canberra Police take care of it. And I wonder if this will actually be extended to Israel, because Israel so far has been the only country who has been allowed to have their own secret armed secret service come to the United States and be able to carry arms, which is actually against the Australian Constitution. Wait, correction, the U.S. was allowed to do it for AIPAC. But that was pre-Rudd. I do sense a change in the wind. So, you know, if you live somewhere where the torch is going to be, please go out there and support the Tibetan protesters. You don't have to go in and get involved with the scuffle. Bring a sign, carry a Tibetan flag, get some face paint. Show support, because this actually speaks to so many greater issues. And China really needs to open up to the rest of the world and start getting, you know, welcome to the 21st century. Shit, welcome to the 20th century. You're so damn far behind when it comes to human rights. Because at the moment, our economies are so tied in that none of our political leaders will take a real stand against them. So it's up to folks like you and me. I'm going to keep an eye and see if it comes through Sydney, because I think that this is only going to get more and more intense. It's going to be a wild ride, and we'll see if they end up canceling legs of this thing. Because I think it's going to become too much of an embarrassment for the Chinese. Then again, you know, their arrogance may just make them just, you know, steamroller right through. But to go back to Harry's piece from earlier in the show, I think the idea is, you know, We'll be nice at the games, but you need to do a couple things in exchange. Release the 10 greatest human rights activists in China, invite the Dalai Lama to Beijing and talk with him and allow a real UN peacekeeping force into Darfur and stop getting in the way of there being actual change in Darfur, actual help to the people suffering in Darfur. I think it's a really, really great way to go. I didn't really get to... actually, this is the one link that I did get to ELO for the blog post today. So it is actually at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com. Go check this, check the piece out and email it to everyone you know. Especially those that might say, oh, it's not our business, it's apolitical. No, it's not apolitical anymore. The Chinese made it political. And if you're worth anything as a human being, we need to put pressure on our local Olympic organizations to say, okay, yeah, we'll play nice at the games, but you have to do these things first. We got 4 months. We have 4 months. Thanks for being there, folks. Thanks for hanging with me today. Thanks to Bob for producing today. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Keep up the fight against mountaintop removal mining. Thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions for the music. And thanks to you all for being with us today. So as we stay here on Fox Stuff, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man, I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that, that's me working for you. Oh, sign, sign, everywhere a sign, blocking out the scenery, breaking my mind. Do this, don't do that, can't you read? Shot on sight. So I jumped on the fence and I yelled at the house, hey, what gives you the right to put up a fence to keep me out or to keep Mother Nature in? If God was here, he'd tell you to your face, man, you're some kind of sinner.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. When Reverend Sun Myung Moon began his preaching in the early 60s and 70s, he was widely considered to be a kook, even though he had some 30,000 people in America handing out flowers on street corners. A lot of people were upset with him. There were rumors that, in fact, he took young people and dragged them off into a cult, and that he would deprive them of protein or sleep or other ways to make them compliant. Indeed, he